I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. This month, Circuit Court Judge Terry Lewis ruled that two of the state's 27 districts, Daniel Webster and Corrine Brown's districts, were drawn unfairly. But with the 2014 primary just weeks away, will lawmakers have time to redraw the districts, and what impact will this have on the election? I'll speak to 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry about the issue and other political topics impacting Florida, like the race for the governor's mansion and the upcoming midterm elections. Our monthly political roundup, that's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined by 90.7 political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. Dick Batchelor, a former Democratic State House representative. He's the founder and president of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Dick, nice to have you back.
Great to be back.
And Lou Fry, former Republican congressman, the founder of the Lou Fry Institute for Politics and Government at the University of Central Florida. Lou, very nice to have you back too.
Good to speak to you.
A lot of politics to get through. Earlier this month, Circuit Court Judge Terry Lewis ruling that two of the state's 27 districts, Daniel Webster and Corrine Brown's districts here in Central Florida, in fact, were drawn unfairly. But he's unsure that those districts can be redrawn with the primary elections just around the corner. Dick Batchelor, I want to start with you. Were you surprised by this ruling coming down from the judge?
I really wasn't. If you look at Corrine Brown's district, it meanders from here to Jacksonville and back, of course. And it was obviously drawn to, number one, protect her incumbency, which is perfectly, you know, something they do all the time. But the fact is, you had Article 4 and Article 5 that was initiated by the League of Women Voters and others, the Fair District Amendments, and they were supposed to follow those. The legislature did not follow those. And this judge has basically said, you very intentionally drew this district, not necessarily to help Congresswoman Corrine Brown, but also to help Dan Webster and John Mock and others. And you benefited those that are incumbents, which is always done. But the fact is, the judge called him this time. And I don't think it's a very difficult position for him to be in, because he can't, number one, draw the districts himself. Number two, you get an election coming up very soon in November, and it would be very unprecedented, I would think, Lou, for a judge to basically set aside a whole election. So he might just have to let the election proceed and that the legislature reconvene after the election and redraw those district lines.
Lou, what are your thoughts?
It's a mess.
It is.
The basic reason is that the incumbents have a lot of power, and they like to draw districts that favor them. And, you know, and you can get 20 of the most honest people in the world and put them in a room to try and get a district, and it won't come out. It's political. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many times I keep telling people it's really political. It should be within some sort of a range where it can be semi-reasonable, but it's going to end up being political. And the reason for Corrine Brown is that that district is safe for her. But if they start taking off some of the district, especially the lower part of the district, and that it could be that she loses her seniority in the Congress. And she is, by the way, works very hard in terms of her homework and what she does. She and Mike are a good team together. And so from the standpoint of the state and the people here, I'd like to see them, frankly, I'd like to see it stay like it is now. How they're going to do it? Can they have a special election in the middle of it?
We have to do it afterwards. One of the things that will come out of this, though, it's going to be redrawn. The district was going to be redrawn, no doubt. Congresswoman Corrine Brown, who's a very good congressperson, is going to lose part of her territory, primarily African American voters. If you shift those at Dan Webster's district, enough voters, you could make his district lean Democrat. Mm-hmm. If it leans Democrat, does that mean Val Demings now is going to go back and run for Congress? Now, if it leans Democrat, I can tell you she won't be the only candidate, because if you have essentially a seat that's leans Democrat, you're going to have a number of candidates run.
Yeah, it's really not fair to the people is what it comes down to. Everybody ever thought of reapportionment as being, quote, fair, but you thought that you'd like to at least have a little common sense involved in this one, and this one sort of got out from under. And who knows? I mean, nobody really does know what's going to happen then. Time the clock's ticking.
If the election goes ahead, if it seems like it might well do, could there then be a challenge from, say, the League of Women Voters or some of the other groups?
Definitely
challenging. Yeah, and saying, look, this election is invalid.
Yeah, everybody's. Definitely. All the lawyers are opening their wallets.
We could do that. When David King, who's one of the lawyers for the League of Women Voters, who's a local lawyer, I'm sure I know you know David, has been very aggressive in this case. But, again, they could challenge the election, but most likely, if I were to guess what would happen, is the judge will let this election stand, but with a direction, clear direction to the legislature, that as soon as the election's over, they will have to reconvene, redraw the district lines, and there will have to be another special election. So whoever runs in this election will have to run again probably within 1 year.
And raise money.
And raise money all over.
There you go. Here you go. Just over one thing going, you get these wonderful letters. I'm really doing all right. You know, I'm in good shape and everything. And kabang, another election, another million bucks here,
surprise.
$2 million there. Not what you want to have happen. And I don't think it's best for our state.
Dick Batchelor, since you mentioned it, and we've talked about this in previous programs too, Val Demings, if there were to be a special election a year from this one, does that give her enough time to get a war chest and
oh, absolutely.
Up in order?
She did so well in the last campaign, and she was able to raise, I think, someplace in excess of $3 million with the help of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and Michael Bloomberg's Political Action Committee and others. So she could raise the money, and she's a very favorite candidate. But the point I also want to make again is that if there is, quote, what I would call an open seat, a new seat leaning Democrats, there will be a number of people who will look at that seat.
Mm-hmm. Moving along, Charlie Crist tapped Miami-Dade Democratic Party chairman Annette Tadeo-Goldstein to become his running mate. Governor Rick Scott's lieutenant governor, running mate Carlos Lopez Cantera, also from Miami. What does this say about the focus of this election?
It says what Lou and I have said time and time again, that the running mate has to be Hispanic, South Florida, and preferably female.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
and they both made really pretty good choices. One of the things it does for Scott, in the election for Charlie, is it makes him a little more official, and I think he probably came out a little better on that. You know, there's in the history of our country, there's very few times that the vice president really had much to do with it. I can think offhand of certainly the Lyndon Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there's one where it truly made a difference in his involvement.
Mates,
made
right.
a difference.
Is it a fair comparison, though, presidential campaigns to gubernatorial races?
Not necessarily, but on the other hand, you can always learn.
Mm-hmm.
And why do people do something? Why is it driving them? Why has it given Chris a boost? Because people think it's going to play out well, and it makes his Nan Rich, you know, she's worked hard and she's a good candidate, but she's raised very little money along the line, and she is doing the best she can to keep her nose above water, and this just about shoved her all the way down. I think
it was an interesting strategy, a presumptive close, I call it, by Charlie Crist, to go ahead before the primaries even come and gone. He's already announced his running mate. It was a smart move.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we went back, and Lou have always said the candidate that Scott picked or the candidate that Charlie Crist picked had to be South Florida, had to be Hispanic, male or female, and they both got one male and one female. But that just shows you the importance and the growing importance of the Hispanic vote.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't show the difference in terms of where the voting power is in Florida. It's always been in the Southeast.
Yeah.
I mean, it's down there. And when you're trying to figure out if your statewide candidate's won or lost, you got to look at the precincts down there, figure them out pretty quick. And if you're not doing well down there, you can just get ready for the next campaign.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, if we talk about the campaign, too, I'm wondering what you folks make of the couple, times that Rick Scott has appeared on camera, and the way he's answered questions or not answered questions, if you want to put it like that, and the political mileage that the Crist campaign might have garnered from this. Dick Batchelor, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, Governor Scott has developed a reputation for not answering questions that he doesn't want to answer, and it becomes almost to the point of embarrassing. Now he's made it... he's made it on national TV now.
The ridiculous
CNN, ridiculousness,
CNN.
So I think at some point in time you've got to be able to answer some questions. And I know that your campaign staff is saying the mantra is jobs created, jobs created, jobs created. But you really do have to talk about some other things. You can't.
But not too many.
I know. I understand the strategy. But at some point in time, you've got to answer more than one question.
Mm-hmm. Lou Fry, what would you be telling Rick Scott if you were on his campaign staff at this point?
Well, I think they've done a lot of work on it. Mm-hmm. They've developed a strategy that has worked. I mean, it has. It's moved them back from being really non-important to being really ahead in some of the polls. And if it ain't broke, you know, well, I'll fix it. He isn't going to make the Gettysburg Address. I mean, you're it.
That's right. He's not. So that's a lot of ways to put it.
Fine, and you keep him on point. And the trouble is, too, with a lot of candidates, they get tired. They're saying the same thing over and over again. The trouble, not the trouble, but we got a bunch of people in this state, some of whom will never hear him speak. You know, you got to always tell yourself, look, this is the first time and the last time I'll be in these people's room, or I'll be in the TV set with these people. I'm going to just have to make believe that I really care about this, which I do, but I'm getting tired of it too. You know, it's you got to keep the candidate pumped up, and when you get it in, boy, here's another chance to talk about it, and we're doing well in the polls, and which he is. I mean, he's certain nobody is giving this race to anybody yet.
Yeah, keep in mind the media can be critical of him for that approach to whether or not he answers questions or not. But keep in mind that you're really not talking to the media. You're talking to the voters, and that's what he's been able to do. Keep in mind also he got elected governor the first time. Of course, he spent $7, $8 million of his own money by not visiting one editorial board in the whole state. He got not one editorial endorsement in the state. But he's beginning to do that now. So he's come out of that cage a bit, and so he's doing that. But keep in mind every time you speak, and while the press might not like your answer, your non-answer, you're talking to the public, you're talking to the voters, you're not talking to the press.
And look how he's changed. Where did he have his first announcement of his budget?
Lake County, the villages.
Right, in the villages, right. That, you know, so he's changed practically 180 in terms of how he campaigns and what. And why has he done that? Because he's looking at the polls, and the polls show that he's a player. He's in the ball game. This election is far from being over. And I would guess inside the his administration, they're relatively happy with what's going on.
Do you think he'll debate Charlie Crist? What are the chances of that debate actually happening?
Depends how strong he is in the polls. It's pretty simple. If you're running ahead in the polls in this time, you don't say you won't debate. You say, oh, I love debate. Yeah, here's my
just
staff
out,
person.
Yeah.
Let them work it out. And guess what? They work it out for 4 days before the election, or the week before the election, when it really doesn't have any impact or has very minimal impact. So he's going to postpone it as long as he can, because he's not going to say, I'm not going to debate.
I think you'll have to debate. I think this election is going to stay between 4 points all the way down to the line, I believe, anyway, no matter how much money spent on either side. The fact is the voters in this state know Charlie Crist and they know Rick Scott. And so you can spend a lot of money, but I think the margin will stay within 4 to 5%. I think he'll have to debate. And I think it would be one of the best televised debates. And I think it would be a national debate. I think Florida is so important that it would be a national debate, as it was when Jeb Bush was here. I remember Tim Russert hosted a debate with him and his opponent. So I think he will have to debate.
How do you think Rick Scott will do, given that you've said somewhat jestingly you're not going to get a Gettysburg Address out of him? Debating is a whole other skill in itself.
He won't do very well at all. I think that's what he's afraid of. I think Charlie Crist is really smooth to the nth degree.
He'll pick up something, information.
He'll have to find some information. And I'm afraid what's going to happen is I'm afraid it'll get very personal. Which, by the way, is interesting, because a recent polls, and they gave the Libertarian candidate something like 9 points, which is unheard of, because the people polled say they were so tired of the negative campaign waged by both Scott and Crist. They're tired of that. At any time, and that 9% could kill Crist in the general election. Just what happened when Ralph Nader got in the race against Al Gore and refused to get out, and Al Gore lost because of that.
Do you think the medical marijuana issue could sway some of those votes back to Crist, though?
You know, the polls this
morning. You're talking about voter turnout.
Yeah, the voter turnout. And the answer, I don't know if the voter turnout would be that much different, but if you saw the most recent polls today, in fact, medical marijuana polls, like 83% people are in favor of medical marijuana. Now, where that's going to turn out,
I don't know. Yeah, that's another story.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's going to turn a lot of people out or not, but I really don't know.
Well, let's talk about that, because that poll, it's pretty new. It shows overwhelming support from voters to legalize medical marijuana in Florida. And as we know, it's medical marijuana here in Florida is a little different from some of the other states. It's a pretty narrow definition. It seems like a pretty straightforward win, though. 88% of voters in that poll supporting the amendment. Do you see the vote going any other way?
From that, it's been constant. all along. I mean, it's been constant. Medical marijuana is something that the people in Florida want, and I think it's what they're going to get. The question is, what do we get next year and the year after and so forth? Does medical marijuana turn into, you know, medical have a lot of fun deal? And hopefully the state has taken steps and the law enforcement to make sure it is a confined kind of a statement or an issue.
And I think that's the reason the legislature got in early. Ordinarily, the legislature will wait till the constitutional amendment passes and then draft legislation to implement it. But now this session they got together and they really narrowed it down until the last day of the session. And they had it narrowed down to two or three things, but now they added on, you know,
Christmas tree.
Lou Gehrig's disease, you know, cancer, other things. I just returned from Vancouver, and in Vancouver, while medical marijuana is legal and they have clinics, if you go there without a prescription, there's a naturopath on duty there. And if you have some illness that he can, he'll prescribe for you on the spot. And then Colorado has legalized marijuana. I don't think any of us want that. At least I do not want that in the state of Florida. So if it's medical marijuana and it's a very, very prescriptive, very narrowly written, where there are only five dispensaries in the state of Florida, they're very well regulated, that's what I think people are in favor of.
Do you think it'll open the floodgates, though? That's what some of the opponents are saying they're worried about.
And that's always the issue. I mean, where's slippery slope? Where is it going to stop? I give you the arguments that they're going to make on it, hopefully. There's another side of it. Common sense will apply in this thing. It's something that is needed and is useful, and they better be darn sure they really know what they're doing, and they keep it a very narrow, narrow passageway.
Let me interject something. When Ambassador Simler, somebody who you know is heading up a group that's trying to oppose the medical marijuana initiative, I don't think they can do it. And then what happened is the medical marijuana proponents, they recruited John Mills, the former Speaker of the House, former Dean of the University of Florida Law School, to work with a group of people who were opposed to marijuana being legalized to be sure that, it is very, very prescriptive. So that was a very smart move on their part to go ahead and start saying, you're right, we're going to look at this and we're going to be sure it stays narrow, narrowly defined.
I'm wondering, though, I mean, Lou Fry, you talk about you hope there's some common sense involved. Florida is often in the spotlight where legal issues are concerned, issues around elections, for example, and people say there isn't a lot of common sense going on.
I would agree with you that common sense is not used all the time, but it's nice to have new precedents that really...
Are you worried, though, that Florida might be setting up to fail here with with the way this rolls out?
No, I think the people involved in it, the place, the five units they've set up, if you will, to do it, I think they're really taking the first steps on this that should make some sense, and I see no reason why not.
But just keep in mind, too, the way they wrote the law, though, it has to be a certain kind of marijuana, number one. Number two, the THC extract, which is the extract to get you high, it can only be no more than 1% of it. And the CBD, which is the part that really seizures respond to, you know, is really what they're going after. And let me go across the board a minute. If you look at it nationally now, the New York Times just came out this weekend and said every state should legalize it like they did the prohibition state by state, and they're going to start that debate. But I don't see Florida in that. There would be some people in Florida, obviously, who would like to see it legalized, but I don't see it legalized.
Yeah, there's too many other things in Florida to do if you're really in one sense. You know, a lot of it's like gambling. We've got gambling, and there's some places that we don't have issues we gamble on. We seem to be able to make that distinction.
I'm Matthew Petty. You're listening to Intersection on WMFE. I'm speaking with 90.7 political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. You can join the conversation online on Twitter or Facebook. You can also send us an email, intersection@wmfe.org. If I could just take a quick detour back 40 years to a time when medical marijuana was probably not considered a form of medicine. It was recreational, purely. Watergate's the 40th anniversary of Watergate.
Yeah, I was involved in that. I was in the Republican leadership.
You weren't involved in Watergate.
Well, I wasn't involved in Watergate, but I was involved in the repercussions of Watergate.
Remember, we are taping this conversation.
Which you're reading, which I still have all the documents, all the tapes. I've read them all. I've underlined them. I had to do it before I made my decision. And my decision was that President Nixon, who I thought has been a great president and done so many good things, you know, crossed the line. And you just can't do it. You can't have one set of rules for the president and you have one set for anybody else. And it was a horrible position to be in. And Jerry Ford, who, frankly, I still disagree with on the timing of the pardon, Jerry Ford said the national nightmare is over. Florida had been part of that nightmare because President Nixon, I think it was his last outside speech, Dick, President Nixon came down to speak to the university. And there was nobody riding in the plane with me. Usually when you come down, all the members of Congress, there was nobody in the plane except me.
It's the University of Central Florida.
My wife and two of the kids met the president and Pat Nixon at the airport. And certainly you were scratching your head. Here you are in the midst of history and the country. You know, what happened if Nixon at that time had said, hey, I'm going to burn the tapes. They're my tapes. I'm going to burn them. To the very end, the president felt that these were political documents. These were historical documents. He hadn't done anything wrong, you know, and it was going to come out, you know, with the courts.
I wonder, just switching gears a little bit, I mean, talking about presidents and the legalities and the kind of challenges they face, I wonder what you folks make of the legal actions sort of trying to be brought against our current president, President Obama, right now, and whether that's got any gas or if it's just going to fizzle.
Well, I've been through one personally and directly, and I think it doesn't help the country, really. And I think we're in a stage where the country does need help, and I think that isn't the answer to some of the problems. I don't agree with Obama much at all, but that isn't the impeachment isn't the issue. And it seems that if people would take their time a little bit and focus on it, there's a lot of things we need help, a lot of areas in the medical area, you know, a lot of stuff going on that would really needs good people to step out and do it. And let's just sort of hope they do it.
Mm-hmm. 2 points. Number one, it's really. The Constitution basically says you can impeach a president for high crimes and misdemeanors, and I haven't seen any violation of those. Whether or not you agree with them politically is another thing. And they can sue them if they want to, but I don't think they have a standing, number one. Number two, this is all about getting out the midterm voters. It's all it's about. I mean, you throw the word impeachment around long enough, you get the Tea Partiers and people like that excited and get the base excited. That's all it's about. It's nothing short of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 24 hours is hard to fill the news. You know, and so you have a big, giant industry that's got to get something out. Every day there's got to be something churned out of this kind of thing, and I think that's just one of the churned-out things.
A couple other things I want to deal with very quickly. Two Florida counties overturning the state ban on same-sex marriage, Miami-Dade and Monroe counties, but, of course, Pam Bondi announcing she'll appeal the ruling, so that a hold being put on that. Dick Batchelor, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think that will be overturned again by a judge, or do you think that'll stand?
I think they'll be overturned again, even though it was a constitutional amendment. The fact is the court is ruling that under the federal law, it's a discrimination. And Pam Bondi, interesting that her to be involved in it. Of course, she's got two Democrats running in the primary, which one will oppose her. And really, for a Democrat, this is the gift that keeps on giving, because this is a Democratic issue. So Pam Bondi basically wanting to defend Florida's constitutional amendment on the prohibition of same-sex marriages, she's in a position that favors her in the primary, but not necessarily
much,
favors her
by
in
much
general.
Of a vote, Dick?
I don't know that. But I think the awkward thing is here. This is a good issue for her in the Republican primary, but it's not a good issue for her in the general election. But it's a good issue for the Democrat who gets the nominee in the general election.
And for the Tea Party.
Tea Party. I don't think they'll weigh in on same-sex marriages. I don't know. They keep weighing in on stuff that's totally unrelated to where they started. But so they may weigh in on. I don't know.
Aside from this race, the Attorney General race, looking ahead to November, and of course the gubernatorial race, what else are you looking at? I mean, it seems like a fairly kind of low intensity campaign season so far.
It is. The cabinet positions, and of course, you know, every cabinet member has a Democrat that would run against them, but every cabinet member has raised in excess of $1.5 million, so they're in good stead. You know, the CFO and agriculture and I feel like Rick Perry. I got a CFO, Attorney General. Attorney General. Attorney General.
You know all
so,
about
but
it.
There's not a lot of interest. But I think the Attorney General's a race will probably generate the most interest because it is about laws and same-sex marriage and those kind of issues, constitutional issues. The CFO's race and agriculture probably not raise a lot. Right. And then local here very quickly, I bet you the turnout's not 15% low.
I was just saying it was 9%. at one point in a midterm election about 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 yeah. elections ago.
And we don't have a mayor's race.
Yeah,
you got a clerk of the court and two or three county commissioner races. They're not highly visible except in their respective districts. So I think the turnout is – by the way, over 200,000 absentee ballot requests have been submitted, though.
That may be a change.
That will make the difference. A lot of people are requesting absentee ballots, but I understand history says that of those who request an absentee ballot, 75% of the Republicans who request them actually vote. Only 50% of the Democrats actually extend their vote after they get absentee ballots. So that will help the turnout, but I still don't think it's going to be 15%.
Well, you don't have much time to worry about it right now. It's going to be hard to change people's votes or their thoughts. They're sort of getting set in now. And I think, Dick, you and I wander around, people say, who's going to win? Well, really don't know who's going to win when the election is so sparse.
Yeah.
It's sort of, I've been at civics working on it. We're still working on it. The Institute is. It's really sad when you think that if, say, 10% of the people vote are going to vote, 5.1% are going to carry it. And you can have a vote total that low and carrying some very, very important races, and especially when you have ones that people really don't understand and they just think it's a waste of time.
Really quickly, too, on the city level here in Orlando, Mayor Buddy Dyer announcing a $30 million budget shortfall in next year's budgets. He's also proposing an increase to the city's property tax. Dick Batchelor, do you think this will be well received, and do you think the commission will approve it?
Well, I think it's a mill, and it depends on the. You have a household of $200,000, it might make a difference, a few hundred dollars. So you'll find some resistance to it. I think that his, and he had tried to address it up front. I think the biggest thing he's got to convince the voters: this is not to pay, for Performing Arts Center and the Orlando Magic and soccer stadium and those kind of things. These are really taxes to pay for, paving roads and sewage treatment.
You have the names. The names will be spelled out like it did last time in terms of which schools.
This is on the city tax.
Yes.
But I think on the city tax. But I don't know. He's a strong mayor and he gets a lot of stuff done. He alluded to it in his presentation that he just has to convince people this is not paying for the venues.
How tricky is that going to be, though? I mean, and Lou Frey might want to weigh in here. I mean, do voters, can they tell the difference if they see a city spending a lot of money on certain things? Are they going to know that this tax isn't going to that without doing their homework?
Yeah, it is. I think when you look at the area and so forth, what's the most important thing we've got going? And it's education for our kids. And there's no question that it deteriorated over a period of time. And so you got to balance. I mean, there's certainly an argument on the other side, don't pay any taxes, don't do anything. Yet on the other hand, I guess most of us with kids and with families with kids are really concerned about the education, especially because it'll be an open book. It's not going to be something that people will not know about.
I've been speaking to 90.7's political commentators Lou Frey and Dick Batchelor. Lou Frey, former Republican congressman, an attorney now at Lowndes, Drostic, Doss, Cantor, and Reed. Lou, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
And Dick Batchelor, former Democratic State House representative, head of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Dick, nice speaking with you.
Thank you.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. You can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.